Get the knives out. Dish is about to be served. Outrageous. Are you kidding? I've been inside only one woman after I was born. The Statue of Liberty. Provocative. If it's a pain in the ass, honey, you're not doing it right. Pop culture. Meanwhile, she's on the cover of Us Weekly. Dating. Boyfriends are like jobs, except he probably stopped sucking after a year. Wicked. What do I look for in a guy? My dick. Smart. Sassy. Contemporary. I mean, I can't. Porn Again. The podcast. Everyone,
hello,
hello, Mister.
Hello.
We're here for what? We're here for dinner.
You said porn, and I thought food. They always go together,
right? Yeah.
And eating.
What I think will be one of the best episodes ever. So, welcome to Porn Again, the podcast. Obviously, I'm Josh Zavera. So, I'm excited to have my guests today, who are all strikingly individual personalities, linked by one iconic superstar, who is Madonna.
Charo.
Right. What if that was? Backup singers for Charo.
Who's amazing, by the way.
I'm sure. These three gentlemen joined Madonna on the 1990 Blonde Ambition Tour and were featured in the subsequent Miramax documentary Truth or Dare. Mm-hmm. Louis Camacho. Louis emerged from the underground ballroom scene in New York, specifically the House of Extravaganza.
Yes.
Am I saying that right? Do I say it with the right flair?
Absolutely.
Okay, roll good. The R.
Extravaganza. Don't you love when people do that, when people speak a certain language, but they say everything in that accent? They repeat it. Like, they're like, oh, we're going on a vacation to Nicaragua. I'm like, just fucking say Nicaragua.
Yeah, just say Nicaragua.
Okay? No need. Yeah. You're also an actor. You appeared in The Birdcage.
Right? I did?
Yes.
With Kevin.
With Kevin, right. And Kevin, Kevin, you were in Showgirls, too.
This is Showgirls.
Which, of course, is a classic.
Kevin's in Showgirls.
Claim to fame.
We take the cash. We cash the check. Mm-hmm. Show them what they want to see.
That's right.
So that just got me totally off track. And Louis, you are continuing to work as a choreographer, is that right?
I do, yes, from time to time, absolutely.
Great. And then Kevin Stay.
Yes.
Kevin, you are the assistant choreographer, dance captain, and dancer on the Truth or Dare Tour,
yes,
is that right? And you've danced with, let me make sure I have this all right, but stars including Lady Gaga, Janet Jackson, Prince, Beyonce, Cher, Britney Spears.
Yeah.
And you've modeled for designers including Jean-Paul Gaultier, Calvin Klein, Fendi.
Yeah.
So what haven't you done? Maybe that would have been a shorter list. things you haven't been involved in.
Bjork. You know what? Bjork.
Bjork.
Oh, I wanted to. I was supposed to do Dancer in the Dark with Vince Patterson as his assistant. And
I thought you were going to mean as a tour. I was like, I don't picture that to be so high energy.
No, I have my like bucket list of people I'm like dying to work with that I'd work for free. Okay. Bjork is on there. Oddly, so is Sheila E.
Sheila E. is my next door neighbor.
She's
borrowing a parking spot from me right now.
Are you fucking kidding?
So we can talk about that.
Oh my God. I tell her every time I see her, I will do anything for you for free.
Okay, well, we can talk about that because literally we share a wall. So she drums me to sleep at night.
Oh my God.
And I don't know if I'm allowed to just say that, but I said it. and also you continue to act and dance and sing, and people can find your music at thatrogueromeo.com.
Yes,
so
correct.
Check that out. And Carlton Wilborn.
Yes.
You began actually as a professional dancer in Chicago, mm-hmm. right, with the Hubbard Street Dance Company.
Correct.
And then you went to Madonna's tour from that. Is that right?
By way of other things. So okay, I finished Hubbard Street and then went to Australia, worked with the Sydney Dance Company.
Okay.
Another company in Columbus, Ohio called Ballet Met, then ended up in LA.
And then you actually went on to do the Girly Show with her. Is
correct.
That right?
Yep.
Okay. And you've also, you worked with Michael Jackson, Janet Jackson, Twyla Tharp,
Mariah Carey,
And you also act, you have, I think, more than 20 film and TV roles to your career.
Yeah. It's been fun.
And now you are, in addition to continuing to dance, you're a life coach.
Mm-hmm, that's right? Where a lot of my focus is now as well.
Got it. Yeah. And actually, you have a memoir,
because we love memoirs around here.
Ooh, that's the juicy stuff, y'all.
Front and center.
Which is amazing, by the way.
I have to get mine signed before you leave.
Cool.
And then your workbooks, and these are all available on Amazon.
Absolutely. Amazon and CarltonWilburn.com.
Ooh. Got it. All right. All right, so now we know who we're talking to here. So there's a new documentary coming out. It's a Dutch film, is that right? That revisits the Blonde Ambition Tour and Truth or Dare 25 years later and sort of gathers all of you to talk about what like was life after that.
Yes.
What was life like during and after?
Okay. Mm-hmm. But although we're supposed to think we know what life was like during, right?
I don't
based
think
on Truth or Dare. I mean, or no.
No,
so that wasn't really a documentary in the true sense.
I see what you mean.
It wasn't particularly about us per se.
Right.
We were subjects in it, but it wasn't about us. So there's definitely a backstage of the backstage that needs exploring. And this film does that.
Got it. Okay. So before I get into all of that, I always like to cover one or two hot topics or things that are which. Most people call hot topics. I call things that are annoying me that week. So I'm wondering if everyone heard about the Elton John harassment suit that was first filed.
Yes.
That one of his bodyguards
claims. Yes, exactly. That he's been grabbing parts.
Exactly. So what do we think? Like, do we think that that's
a John Travolta situation? did I say that?
Oh, my goodness.
Everything that we're saying is allegedly.
Allegedly.
Always alleged.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put anything past him, but I can't. I think it's just extortion, honestly.
Well, and also he stopped working for Elton John in 2014. So
yeah.
Whether or not he just filed or how this just comes out now, and if you're working for somebody for that long, because to my knowledge, he had been working for him for years before that. So why didn't he quit and it come up at that time?
Right.
Like, those are the things that I don't entirely understand.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I think it gets a little trickier than that. Like, I always question. I think that we sometimes as a culture have to be careful that we are, most of the cases, we are there to support the celebrity,
mm-hmm.
right? So Elton John is the one. So
right.
Anybody else that's under that title, we always want to assume they're just trying to do something to get some attention, to get some money. And that's not necessarily the case.
Well, of course. Right.
And I also believe that, you know, just watching my own journey, there are things that have happened that it takes you a while to process. And like maybe the guy needed 2-3 years to decide, shit, should I really do this? I know I want to do this. What's the ramification? That's real talk.
You really are a life coach. I mean, I'm listening to that right now. I want to write you a check just for that 2 minutes.
I'm just saying.
Anyway, the rest of us jaded folk. I love the planet that you live on.
Hey, it works for me.
You know, it could go either way. I mean, again, you know, I'm not saying one way or the other. I wasn't there. I don't know. But it just seems to me that the fact that it's coming up now,
right.
You know, I always scratch my head a little bit when things like that happen. Also, having been people who are around celebrity, is it possible that when that familial feeling starts, when you begin to feel close to somebody, that things happen and lines get crossed? I mean, I know people who are friends of mine who are celebrities
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and whom I've worked with, where if they grabbed me or pinched my butt or whatever, I wouldn't think twice about it, nor would I consider it harassment because
right.
of my relationship
absolutely
with them.
True. Absolutely.
So at what point does that line really get crossed?
Yeah.
You know,
it's about comfort. I mean, like,
right.
I treat my friends in a way that I feel like I would be in the hot seat in that sort of situation as well. I treat people very comfortably and I'm very
right.
physical and touchy-feely. And
same here.
Not in a pervy kind of way, but in a playful
no,
way.
No, that's disappointing.
Well, it depends on, depends on who's around.
Like, I expected so much more from you, Kevin. So, and then related to that, also, while we're on the Elton John wagon, what did you think of his comments, having been on tour with a number of celebrities who I'm sure use varying degrees of backing vocals and tracks, about his comments about Janet Jackson and how he'd rather see a drag queen perform than a Janet Jackson show?
Wait, I missed that.
I missed that one, too.
Yeah, he commented that she lip-syncs her way through a show and that he'd rather see, he'd get more entertainment out of a drag queen than than watching a janitor, than paying money to see
I mean, look, guy. I mean, I think that that's just, why be mean?
Yeah.
Like, what's the point of that?
She's
like,
dancing her ass off. Nobody right. dances as hard as Janet
well,
does anymore.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. How do you, if when you're, I mean, he is, give it to him, he's a great musician, but he sits at a piano and sings, and it's not that high energy. When it's somebody who actually has to perform, how do you keep the quality of the vocals up and dance the way she's supposed to?
And, like,
to
why is he making a comment about Janet and what? And what she's doing, like, what's the, why?
Right.
Why?
Right. What's right. the point?
Yeah.
Well, right. He's being
outspoken. Just a ploy to just
other than the fact that Janet is happening right now and it gives him some relevance.
Yes.
There you go. All right. I like that.
He has a lot to say about a lot of people.
There was some edge there, Carlton.
Baby, the truth is not left.
Wow. All right. So that's what I have for now.
Hot topics.
Okay. So now... I kind of want to get into where all of your journey started. So, Lewis, if you could sort of explain a little bit about the New York ball scene.
Uh-huh.
And for people who aren't as familiar with, like, there was a documentary in 1990, Jenny Livingston's film Paris is Burning, that yes. sort of brought that culture to the forefront. And it's yes. sort of been an underground New York thing. Can yes. you explain, so people who are sort of arriving at that fair a little late understand what that world is and what you were living through at that time?
Well, the ball scene started, at least to my knowledge, back in the, like, I want to say 60s, even probably as far back as maybe the late 50s.
Mm-hmm.
They were primarily for men who dressed up in drag mm-hmm. and, you know, transgendered men or transgendered women. And they would get together, and it was like a beauty pageant back then. They would get together, and, you know, the categories back then were who can look like a showgirl, who can, you know, who is passable, who is the prettiest, who is, you know, who can look like a businesswoman, who can look like a mom, you know, or things like that. So they would kind of just gather and have these beauty pageants, per se. Over the years, they've evolved into what we now know are the ball scenes,
mm-hmm.
which now include butch queens, which are just gay guys. And, you know, the categories are now more lengthy.
Wait,
and
but
vast.
Explain butch queens a little clearer.
A butch queen is just a gay guy.
Is it just a gay guy, or is it a masculine gay guy?
Well, no, it's not. It's not a masculine
butch
gay
queen.
Guy. A butch queen is just, you know...
Maybe everybody else is such a queen that then just your average gay guy becomes okay. a butch
well,
queen.
In terms of ballroom language.
Ah, got it.
Yeah, just in terms
just
of...
Dressing like a man, though.
About,
just a guy.
Yeah. How did you know about this world? Like, how old were you at the time that you sort of got into that?
I want to say 15, 16.
So where did you find out about it, and how did you get involved?
When I went to high school, I went to the High School of Performing Arts in New York. And
you mean like the Debbie Allen Fame High School? Of the
yes, I went to the Fame School.
You're going
to
pay in sweat.
Yes. It was the first year that the school merged with Music and Art High School. So
okay.
it was the first year that it was the Fiorello H. LaGuardia School mm-hmm. of the Arts. Just in dance and being in dance class, and there were other guys who were in the gospel choir who were in the ballroom scene, and we just found them. We just kind of gravitated to them. It just kind of happened kind of organically.
And did your family, were they aware of this, or was it sort of something you did in your own?
Yeah, I did it on my own, you know, after school, after my scholarship classes.
I want to know what the first ball you went to was like.
I think one of the first balls I went to was a Paris is Burning ball, actually. And it was tough because, you know, I said, I'm going to go sleep over a friend's house. You know, we're going to go out. And, you know, like to a movie or something, just lying to my parents.
But that's not entirely inaccurate.
It's not entirely.
You were going to friends, truth? And you were going out.
And so, but the balls back then didn't start till literally like 5 in the morning.
Oh my God.
So people would get to the
going
ball.
To breakfast. Not, yeah. Not to a club.
Exactly.
To breakfast.
So wow. If I knew that, my lie would have been like different. you know, I'm getting up early.
Right.
You
would have
instead of going like at 10 o'clock or, you know.
I'm going to work out.
Exactly. Been like the star student getting up early. And,
exactly.
You know. So the inspiration for voguing sort of came from that
scene, yes.
That ball scene. So you brought, and Madonna brought that to the mainstream in the famous music video that David Fincher directed.
Yes.
How involved in that were you, and how much of that choreography and that?
Well, me and Jose did all the choreography for it.
So all of that is basically you, and she just sort of recognized that she could appropriate it and bring it into the mainstream. Is that really what?
I mean, for lack of a better.
I mean, I'm not saying that like, as though she stole. I mean, I'm not.
No, she hired us
to do that, specifically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She
so
hired us.
What is it that you think that she saw? Like, what? How? Obviously, she was very forward-thinking to see that and realize that it could be something that she could mainstream.
Yes.
And was there anything about it where anybody felt like this is sort of our cultural thing? And
I didn't feel like that at the time. I honestly didn't. She was writing a song about Vogue. And she needed Vogers to choreograph the video. So I really just took it like that.
And how, do you know how she was aware of the ball scene? And
well, she comes from this underground club background herself. Right. So I wasn't surprised that she knew, you know, the goings on in, you know, at the clubs at the time.
I mean, it's interesting. Sometimes when people ask me about her and what's it like and what's she really like, I always say, I perceive that at the end of the day, she is an underground artist that's been given a lot of money to do her projects.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
That really, at the core, that's what she is.
Yeah.
So,
there are a lot of people who could be Madonna out there with
if given the resources.
Right.
Absolutely.
Got it. So, Kevin, you were 21 when you joined. Is that right?
20.
If I did my math right, but that's why I write, because I can't add.
I was 10. You know, I'm the baby. Somewhere around there. I remember, I was 20, because when I flew to Paris on my 21st birthday in for the Gautier show and ran into Madonna that night, and we went out for my birthday. And so I was 20.
When you say you ran into her, you had already known each other?
Oh, yeah. We had already done the tour.
Into her and she's like, let's have dinner.
We'd already done the tour and literally I bumped into her. Okay. But literally I bumped into her in Paris.
Okay.
I landed with no hotel, nothing. And I just went to the only hotel I knew, which is Hotel Maurice, where we stayed on tour. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I'm here. I don't know what to do. I dropped my bag, walked over to the Ritz-Carlton randomly. And her Brits was outside and Madonna was right inside. And so we like hung out all night. And
had you already, I know you did some photos.
What happened to your bag?
Left it at Hotel Maurice until I got
Hold
a hotel.
Hold this for me.
Okay. Literally, but luckily they remembered me from the summer.
Oh, that's nice.
Hysterical.
I was like, I don't know what I'm doing, but here.
So they were very accommodating.
They're very accommodating. Very nice.
So you've done photos for her Brits, is that right? Mm-hmm. So did you know him before running into him there, or was that sort of the
Yeah, well, he had followed us along often on tour.
Okay. Yes.
He was with us in Japan for the whole month, and he was with us in Europe. Like, he was around a lot.
And there are images of his work in Truth or Dare.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
So, Carlton, I know you are a trained dancer.
Yeah.
Obviously, from the Hubbard Street.
Mm-hmm.
So, can you tell me a little bit about what your life was like before? Because you had already experienced some time in the spotlight.
Yeah. I mean, I had, let me think. By the time I got to L.A., I had been in Hubbard Street. I had worked with another company as a guest artist. I'd been a soloist in the Nutcracker, the you know, sort of traditional holiday extravaganza. And at the time of the audition, thanks. At the time of the audition, I was on hold for Whitney Houston's tour. So I had auditioned for her before I auditioned for Blonde. And Whitney was on hold. She didn't know how long she wanted to go out for. So we were just on hold. And I heard that this other audition was happening and it was him. And I was like, fuck it, I'll go. Like, I've already got a gig in my pocket. It doesn't even matter.
Doesn't matter.
I was literally just there to just, like, have fun and maybe see her and whatever. And poof, she invited, and I had to go like, oh, my God, oh, my God. And people are like, well, of course you would have gone to the Madonna tour. And I'm like, no, I'm a young black boy. Like, it back then was fucking Whitney Houston.
Yeah,
like,
right.
That's what the magic was.
Right. Yeah.
But something told me to go the other direction. And I'm really glad I did, because our thing became what our thing did. And Whitney ended up only going to Japan for 3 weeks.
Wow.
Totally.
But if she had, if you had been with her, it may have all been different.
She would have changed.
She may have decided she wanted to be, spend all that time with you.
I would have been alive today. Like everything. Exactly. You would have been the bodyguard.
Kevin Costner's career could have been over.
Yeah. There would be no Kevin
Costner's career. You know, things like that.
No, I mean, you know, dancing for me, I mean, at that point it was... I was really clear when I left Hubbard Street and left Chicago to come to L.A. You know, especially at that time, the L.A. dancers were the show people, and the New York people, which I was sort of closer to, were like the technicians. And so one of the coolest things that I got to do when I first came out here was a gig with Paula Abdul for the American mm-hmm. Music Awards. And it was
Paula and I go way back.
Oh, do you really? And it was the first time that the East and the West came together, and it was her and like 18 guys in this fun thing. But the point is, I remember when I left Chicago and I was like, I know what that town is about. I'm going to go to that town and have them get me exactly as I am. Like, I was really clear that I was not going to contort myself into some other thing. And it did what it did, and I think it worked. So, yeah.
So Truth or Dare sort of became... Like, the first time, like, for me, it was one of the first times that I saw, and I know not everybody was open in the film as you mentioned to me once before, as is perceived, but I remember seeing the film in the theater and it being one of the first representations of openly gay men who seemed to be living their lives and living their lives authentically. I remember you specifically in the scenes at the Pride Parade, and that was really inspiring to me as a closeted gay youngster to sort of see that there was a hope there. I'm sure I'm not the first person who said that to you guys. How do you feel about that and sort of owning that and that place, that role that you play in people's lives that you may hear from, you may not hear from them, but the fact that it really, it probably did a lot for a lot of people.
It was probably the best gift, quote unquote, to come out of this whole experience, don't you think? I mean...
An honor, truly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, when we hit, even when we hit the States, I mean, people were already starting to come up to us and just say, oh my God, wow, you guys, even just not even seeing the movie, just coming up to us and like, oh my God, you guys are so fantastic, you know.
So you did you guys know until that started happening, did you guys know what you were going to, did you have any idea what you were going to be representing to people?
No, not at all whatsoever. I mean, I was being authentically myself, but at the time I was just questioning as well. I didn't know if I was gay or straight, but it gave me a space to sort of explore it and figure it out. I knew what I liked, but I just dated that. I remember I just got out of my relationship with that girl.
I know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look, it was obvious to everybody else since I was 13.
That girl named Bruce.
I'm thinking about it right now. I mean, the reality is, and I never really thought about this, to what you just brought up, the real facts about the representation of out gay men, in truth, from the movie, was only really expressed by you and Jose and Slam.
And Gabriel with the kiss, yeah.
But that wasn't even an authentically gay thing. That was a dare.
That was a dare.
Yeah, that was a dare. Yeah.
Right? So that doesn't explain.
So that doesn't necessarily.
Right. So it's...
But I think it felt to people, like to me, it felt like everybody seemed very liberated in that movie.
True.
And it seemed like there was an open space for people to be who they wanted to be, and it wouldn't have mattered if you were fucking a man, a woman, a sheep, whatever.
Bi, straight,
like,
as long gay, as she would have, whatever, yeah.
Like, it just seemed like an accepting environment.
It was.
Which was sort of great to see and sort of, I felt, was hopeful, you know, in a way. So, so on screen, it appears that your relationship with Madonna was very close. Would you have at that time considered her a close friend or a confidant, or is that sort of, was that manufactured somewhat for the cameras? Like, how deep would you go with her?
Well, it wasn't manufactured, but I think it all depended on our own comfortability with ourselves. I mean, I felt very friendly with her, but then that was the level of my friendship with everybody at that point, I think. So as much of a friend as I could be to anyone, there we were. You know, I don't know, for you guys.
I was... I felt very close to her. Well, only because, you know, she came to New York. We did a private audition for her where our DJ friend of ours opened a club and, you know, she came to the club. He turned on the music and we just started dancing with her. We went out with her a couple of times just to kind of get to know her and stuff like that. And I don't know. I mean, it was my first real foray into that level of dancing and gig and, you know, being involved in a gig like that. So she knew where we were coming from. Mm-hmm. And so she kind of like, you know, held us, quote unquote, held us close to her. And, you know, we felt very, very close to her in that way. Yeah.
And how?
I would say for myself, if I can share.
Yes.
I mean, it was, again, it was slightly different for me. I did feel very free in the show and in the tour and throughout that, and was watching even myself inside of like a creative environment be expressed in ways that I had never gotten an opportunity to. But in regards to how close she felt, she definitely felt close, but I was also aware of what she was and what we were there to do. Mm-hmm. And I was really clear early in the game to not get it twisted.
So how were you at that age? I mean, so able to process that and understand, was that because of your background and already having worked professionally?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I had not names obviously as big as that, but still people that were hierarchy, you know?
Got it.
And so I knew where to place them and where to place myself, no matter how friendly they show you on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. But Carlton is also more mature than all of us anyways.
Well, he's a life coach.
And by mature,
and
you mean
by
older.
Mature, you mean he's a little bit older.
He's sitting there right now thinking about how I need to be a client.
I can say this, though. Kevin said that first.
I can say it, though, because he looks 20 years younger than all of
us. Black don't crack.
And he definitely does not look his age.
Exactly the same.
Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how long before Truth or Dare actually hit theaters did you guys see it?
Oh, we saw it at... how long before? Mm-hmm. Maybe 2 or 3 weeks.
Was it at a... No, that was...
It was a screening. We did a screening in a small theater because I kind of pushed it and made her. yeah.
I never saw it in the theater with everybody, and I was not at the premiere, so I saw it...
When it opened.
On video the very first time.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And you saw it where?
I saw it at the premiere. We all went to the premiere with her in New York.
Oh, you didn't see the screening?
No, wasn't
maybe it? Maybe it was just me. Maybe it was just me, Oliver, and Gabriel then.
Because it was in Los Angeles. Yeah. So we were in New York. So we had to wait till... Well, we didn't have to wait, but we first saw it at the premiere. Me and Jose went to the premiere with her. Like, literally with her.
I remember seeing shots of you on the red carpet going
in
with
we
her.
Went to, yeah. We went to her house, changed, and then got into the vehicle and...
Now, when you, so for the first time, when you're watching this footage and you see her say things like, you know, I think I surround myself with people who are emotionally crippled.
Okay.
How does that feel? Because to some degree, she's talking about everyone who she brings on the tour with her. And here you guys are, young, impressionable, hearing her say something like that, which you were not in earshot when she said that. So how does that feel to then have a relationship with somebody you consider yourself close to and then hear her refer to you that way?
It hurt. I remember watching it and going, oh, that, why would she say that? Like, but then it was a bit of a shock. And I wish I had actually come out of that screening and been much more thankful and grateful than like it's an amazing movie, like been more, you know, outspoken about how much I enjoyed it. But at the time, like, that really stood in my mind when after I saw the movie. I was like, wait, she thinks I'm emotionally broken and damaged? Like, that's awkward and weird. And it did have me, like, second guess what our relationship was.
And what about for you guys?
I honestly didn't give it a second thought. And that's only because me and Jose, and I'll speak for, you know, myself, but I didn't feel that way towards myself. Mm-hmm. So, you know, honestly, she could say whatever she wants. I mean, I didn't feel that way. So, and I knew in my own self that I was, you know, I am who I am, and that's what I brought to the table, and that's what she liked.
But did you feel betrayed at all by the fact that that was what was going, or at some point that that went through her head? And who knows? It could have just been in the moment that that was shot that that's what went through her head.
I mean, do I wish she chose other words? Yes. You know what I'm saying? But she chose those, so there you have it.
I didn't feel betrayed about it, but what I did realize when I heard those words is that we were generalizations, mm-hmm. that we were tools in a story.
Like sort of characters.
Characters, and very just stereotyped kind of across the board to make a point. And it made me feel sad that we weren't given the opportunity to be individuals and to be ourselves and to really be shown as people rather than just like sort of broken gay dancers.
Well, and I wonder if she realized like that, to my point earlier about it being so inspirational to people like me to have seen you guys, that if she realized that to some degree, I mean, at least for me, you guys were the stars of that movie. Like, she's Madonna. I knew what I was getting. I knew what kind of music I was going to hear. I knew what the concert footage was going to look like. What I didn't know was about the world that you guys were living in. Mm. So to me, that was the,
revelation.
Know. And if you really look at some of what went on in that movie, looking back, if you want to apply the term emotionally crippled, I mean, there were so many things that she does not come across as the most likable character in that movie. I mean, there are so many moments where she's having something to say about Kevin Costner. I think she says something about Oprah Winfrey. She makes a comment about Janet Jackson. I mean, there's a lot of sort of slamming and she doesn't come across as the warmest person in that movie. But I think, and I'd like to hear, Carlton, what you think about that, because is that just a persona? Is that what she needs to be? Is that just sort of the role that she functions in?
That's exactly where it sits for me. And even in the moment when I saw or heard her use those words to define who we were, you know, I mean, I chuckled inside because I knew what she was doing.
Right.
I had experienced these guys for months and knew that they were not that version, or at least not so, you know.
Because there's nothing in the movie that makes any of you come across that
right,
way,
exactly.
In my opinion.
So, yeah, I mean, I think, look, her brand still, to somewhat degree, has been the same. Her brand is largely about triggering people to think and causing the edge to get people to speak and to think. That's what those words, that's what the Kevin Costner bite, that's what the other thing is about.
But is it getting them to think for themselves, or is it getting them to think the way she wants them to think? I mean, there's a difference.
Well, I think she's interested in pushing the button.
Yes, that's the best way to say it.
And she readily admits that herself.
Absolutely.
She's like, I am interested in pushing that button that either, you know, evokes emotion, talk, mm-hmm. conversation, a feeling, you know, whatever, what have you. And so I think that statement was just that, you know,
absolutely said.
You know, pushing a button, saying something in front of the camera or into the mic. I mean, did she really feel that way towards us?
Who knows?
Yeah. You know, like, again, do I wish she, you know, she chose different words?
Yeah.
But she chose those. I didn't feel that way, and they didn't feel that way.
But especially because so many of these sort of generalizations and stereotypes and words about us have been what's sort of been this really lasting memory of us. Like, we've sort of been defined by that.
By that, right.
That's the really only sort of lingering upset
about
it. And
the irony of the comment.
Yeah.
Well, and the irony is we don't show that in the film.
Right.
And
this is, well, that's the truth.
Absolutely.
That's the whole thing. It's like, you know, actions speak louder than words.
Correct.
And what you're seeing are people who seem more comfortable with themselves than she even does.
But I think that this is such a huge conversation about our culture in regards to the celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We drink,
which I'm going to get
juice.
Into a lot more with you
a
little later.
We drink the juice of their identity.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
anything that they say, anything, everybody, even though we all collectively know that they're show people and they're putting a thing on, a lot of people still fall for the okey-doke of what they do.
Right? Well, even they buy the myth after a time.
Well, true. You know, it's like OJ still believes he didn't kill Nicole Simpson. I think he believes it. Mm-hmm. You know.
Carlton's looking like, what?
But anyway.
I digress.
But to your point, she actually makes a comment in the movie where she says that celebrities sometimes assume friendships with other celebrities simply because they're famous.
Right.
So yeah. That sort of is the way of the world. As all of us know, having those people in our lives, you know, I've been with people who are famous and you're on a plane and they run into somebody who they don't know at all, but also happens to be famous in an entertainment. And there is this club that they're in and they hug each other and kiss each other as though there's some genuine
friend.
It's the funniest
shared
thing,
trauma.
Right? So the Blonde Ambition Tour happened before people were really online. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it was really before the internet, before Twitter, social media. It is crazy, especially because so much of the memory of that lives online now, mm-hmm. and people see it that way. How do you think the whole experience would have been different if it occurred with those things floating around, with people having so much access to you? Because now everybody's touchable. You know, people can talk to us. They can, you know, send you a message. They can, you can reach anybody.
Well, I can say this. I don't know. I never thought this. It's a great question. I could imagine, seeing how the social network moves, that we would have individually got more criticism throughout the whole time.
And more followers.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop.
And more followers. One extrava.
Right, Carlton. We will make sure we get everybody in. Everybody's social media, we will get in there.
Hashtag that rogue Romeo.
Exactly, really.
So the tour ends, okay, and you guys get on planes and you fly home and the sun comes up the next morning. What is that moment like when you don't have to show up to a makeup room and you don't have to perform? Is it that, I imagine there's a grieving period.
Almost broke and lost.
Yeah.
I came back without an apartment, nowhere to go, no idea that I didn't even think about arriving home. And suddenly I was like, oh, I'm here off the plane and I have a bag in my hand and no car and nowhere to go and no ideas and no savings because I spent it all on clothes.
As one should.
Yeah, as one should. I mean, I'm overseas. Yeah, it was... There was no real rejoining the world for a moment.
So how long a period of time were you in sort of that cloud?
Well, there was no real cloud. It was sort of like, oh, hit the streets. Oh my God, I'm broke and I have no money. What do? I had to go, I mean, literally right back into auditions that week doing videos. Same thing I was doing right before I left. So it was barely a missed step. It was just... Now I got to get more money and now I got to work again. Blam, back to work.
But what about maintaining the relationships? Because obviously you guys became very close. So keeping track of each other and wanting to be in touch with people who you were seeing every day, but now all of a sudden aren't in your life every day.
Almost impossible. Almost impossible. I mean, there was no cell phones or no social media. It wasn't like we had emails to reach each other.
Right.
Like I didn't, from when we left tour to when we did the MTV Awards, I don't think I saw any of them except Gabriel.
But don't you think also that we also knew that we were working a job?
Yeah.
I mean, the concept of family that's in the movie, yeah, okay, that's there to some degree. But we also knew that we were working a job. And from no job do you absolutely expect to for sure stay in touch with everybody that you bonded with.
But did you were that evolved in your thinking at 26?
It's not even evolved. Like, that's just how the industry is.
I think it is. I think for that age, it's pretty evolved.
I literally just made no plan. So I didn't know how to contact you guys anyways.
I mean, the fact that you had thought far ahead and said, oh, I know this is coming. Like, I know this is coming and I know I'm going to have to deal with
this. Yeah, but Carlton's journey was always so much more different than ours.
He's very cerebral.
He was very cerebral. He always had, like, a plan. I mean, I know I always looked to Carlton, you know, for, you know, where we were. Even going sometimes.
Like, see,
Carlton?
See that.
Oh, he's over there.
I could see where you would be like the parent or the troop leader, if you will. Hmm.
I know that, you know, sort of historically for me with jobs, whether it's her gig, I'm coming off of a TV series, I'm finishing a big movie, I am always strategizing before it ends, especially if it's a bigger. Meaning if it's a big banger, I'm always positioning what the next thing is going to be because I know, having been in it, that fallout might be there if I don't fill the void.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't come back with that kind of oh my God, my world, and what am I doing? First, I was awesomely glad to have like a week to do nothing and, you know, see some friends that I hadn't seen and talk about the fun that it was. And like, that was awesome. And then I just started moving the pieces together to do the next thing I knew I wanted to do, which for me was my acting career.
And then Lewis, were you as, did you have like a reel down?
It wasn't like a reel down. Again, you know, me and Jose were kind of like, because we were in the House of Extravaganza, we were kind of, for lack of a better term, kind of local celebrities anyway in this underground scene. So I went back to, you know, my apartment, i.e. my parents' apartment. Well, actually, they already moved out at the time, so it was already my apartment. And, you know, I hit the club that night, and it was like fanfare. The queens so have returned. The party continued. I mean, there was confetti.
That's fantastic. You
know, a parade, things like that. I'm joking. Okay, I'm not joking.
I would believe it.
I totally would believe it.
I actually believe that.
Your own parade.
And then all of a sudden, you know, it was like a month later, and we were going back to LA. Los Angeles for the MTVs.
Oh, okay.
To do the MTVs. And when we went back, we didn't stay at a hotel. We stayed with Madonna at her house. Mm. Yeah.
That's great. That's kind of exciting. Yeah. So I've seen a lot of articles that have said that there was a period of that after Truth or Dare, she sort of backed away from everybody a little bit. And some of the rumors that were around was because there was drug use among the group and, you know, people came across all sorts of life challenges and she didn't want to be involved with that and that she sort of backed away. Do you is that an accurate representation of what happened, or do you think just, again, a product of the times and how people were able to be in touch, that it just sort of faded out over time? Or what was the reason that she wasn't she didn't remain a presence?
I mean, I think, again, what's important about that is timing. Mm-hmm. It wasn't an instant thing the way that it's positioned right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I was in relationship with her for easily a good solid 10 years after, close. Mm-hmm. Other projects, chilling out. I did a big gig in New York. She came through a personal invitation of mine, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then things shifted. But, you know, so I think that.
But when you say they shifted, what do you attribute the shift to? Like, what changed?
I don't think that it's any different than regular friendships and dynamics of relations that happen in the world. We are with somebody in 1992. I grow away a certain kind of way. They grow a certain kind of way. We don't call each other as much. I see you. It feels good. I see you. It doesn't feel good. I don't invite you to my dinner party. Like, that's just shit that happens with people. And it's just fascinating that it becomes this amplified sort of like horror story that it's happening from a celebrity to you. And like,
in all fairness, it was presented to people in a way that here's this family. Hmm. And you watch that as a consumer and you think these people are bonded forever. And that includes her.
And then I think we are. it took us a while to realize it.
That you'll always have that link. You know, you guys will always be that family.
For real.
But, you know, but my question is why do you think that she hasn't stayed a part of it?
I just think her machine just kept rolling along. I mean, she had a career to kind of tend to.
But let's also be clear. We're in proximity of each other right now because somebody else created a project and enrolled us into it.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
I have never seen, like before Strike a Pose, the film that's coming out now, I had not seen Jose, Slam, and Oliver since we finished the gig 25 plus, you know.
Years ago.
Yeah. So did you just sort of pick up where you left off with them, or was there
It was like that.
It's the weirdest dynamic. Crazy.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of phenomenal.
It's amazing.
It's literally. Yeah. Amazing. It's like,
so it's like you guys had never had that period of time that you were.
It doesn't feel like there was a gap.
No. There was just a gap of time where suddenly we're now grateful for each other.
Absolutely.
And aware of how much we mean to each other.
Absolutely. Hands down, 100.
That's such a special thing, you know, to sort of have something that like always bond you.
I mean, when we were just in Berlin for the for Berlinale, again, you know, we're seeing these folks, and even before, because there's a piece in the film where we have a moment we get to meet. And, yeah, I mean, I was not in touch with how much these guys mattered to me. I guess in truth, if I'm honest, I thought a lot of them different. Mm-hmm. Or a lot of them did not matter to me, is what I thought. You know, these two I've been in touch with. We've been out here. But the other guys was like, well, whatever. I mean, not that I had a bad thing about them, but seeing them was just like, oh my God, I fucking love you. And I've always loved you, and you're like awesome. Like, it's been really very exciting to feel the connection.
Yeah. I also kind of feel like Madonna's pull away from us was sort of my fault.
In what way?
Because of the lawsuit.
Well, I was going to actually ask you about that.
You didn't even have to ask him first.
I clear it up all the time.
He's good. He knows how to good.
He knew we're steering that way.
Well, my question is less about the lawsuit itself. And I understand, you know, we're living in a different time. And we're living in a time where now unscripted programming and how that material gets made and how deals are made with people ahead of time, you know, it probably would have been a whole different negotiation and a whole different thing had that happened now. Mm-hmm. And what I'm curious about is you, Gabriel, and was it Oliver, right?
Oliver, yeah.
Chose to, you know, take legal action. Mm-hmm. The rest of you did not. And yet you guys still have this bond and friendship, but obviously see things a little differently because you guys, for example, Lewis and Carlton, you didn't join in on the lawsuit.
Correct.
So how do you deal with that in terms of the difference is an opinion of what went down?
Well, first of all, the bottom line is that the three of us that pursued the lawsuit, it all came through our agency because they had written in our contracts for a movie, a clause in our contracts for a movie with a very specific amount. And just the fact that they weren't willing to pay that, our agency was like, we need to sue to pursue this because they're not replying to us. So that was the initial push for the lawsuit, which is really, the press really pushed it into different directions and made it into something like, oh, this family is a lie and Madonna's like lying, blah, blah, blah. And they don't understand what this project is and they lied to them. That's not true.
The legal. It was a contractual thing.
It was a contractual thing.
And you were not
thing.
Paid. And
we were not paid. Gabriel's issue was different because he was forcibly outed and they had told him that anything he didn't want in the movie wouldn't be there. So his whole issue about that was very real because they did tell him that. And so from him asking for it to have something pulled out, they said no.
But did they actually say no? What I had heard was that she pushed his hand and said, oh, come on, it's a great scene. No, they did not.
No,
they
just literally said, take it out. Please take it out, begged over and over again. And literally when we saw the screening, then she said that, the picture's locked. They said the picture's locked. Mm. And then,
but you know what's so interesting? It's not even such a seminal moment in the movie. I mean, it's part of that truth or dare game, but if that, you know, couple of seconds was lost, it would have made no difference.
I think it's super important. I mean, I love Gabriel to death. He's one of my best friends.
I think it is.
But I think it's super important for everybody, for gay rights, just for wondering, questioning gay kids who are looking at this movie thinking, am I gay? I don't know. And then they see this kiss and they think, oh my God, there's men kissing. It's hot. It's amazing. It's beautiful.
Right, but that kiss, as you brought up earlier, was not about two people being in love and kissing. It was about somebody daring them to kiss.
True, but you can tell they both wanted it.
So it doesn't necessarily represent what we're, you know, I don't know that it really represents in a very whole, genuine way.
Well, you can see the attraction there and you can see that they really enjoyed it. And you can, and I know that he did. It's just, he wasn't ready to be a spokesperson for the gay lifestyle, especially not back then when it was like a career suicide and just a huge deal. People have a hard time understanding what that's like now because it's not a big deal anymore. Mm-hmm. Everyone has a gay friend or a gay so-and-so or like,
it's now sort of like a cultural must-have.
Yeah,
even if you're an accessory.
Even if you don't know somebody, you see it on TV. And back then, you had never seen anybody kiss on TV, or you never seen two guys kissing at all.
Right.
So it was.
But it was important to him.
Exactly.
My point is that it was important for him to not be there. And in terms of their filmmaking, I understand what you're saying from a cultural perspective. From a filmmaking perspective, it would not have changed the narrative of that film or that story.
No,
they could have lost that without ruining the film. It's not like that moment made the movie.
But I in retrospect, because at the time, I supported Gabriel because I know what he was going through. But at the same time, looking back, I feel like now he'd probably be proud of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm proud of it. I think it's amazing. I think it's wonderful that it's there. I didn't have issue with it at the time either, but
I think as a sort of full ingredient for the film would not have been impacted if it were not there. But in regards to her choosing to want to push buttons, and there's nothing more effective than a visual.
Yep.
Mm. Right.
There you have it.
So that's just, so it really just speaks to what everyone's agendas are.
Sure.
Which were different. You know, everyone had a different thing.
Absolutely.
You know, he didn't want to be outed. Exactly. She wanted to push people's buttons. They want, you know, regardless of the cultural impact. So, so do you think that there's, and we can get to this more in our next conversation in the next hour, but do you think that there was a part of your self-worth that was tied up in being linked to Madonna? Did you feel like as young people connected to a celebrity that part of what people were interested in or liked about you was your link to somebody like that? Or were you all sort of your own people at that point and were able to separate it?
I was aware of it. You know, people wanting, I mean, simply for me, I noticed it first and foremost in regards to getting appointments.
Mm-hmm.
Like as an actor for me, because I came, you know, she and I were having conversations at the end of the tour about acting, and I knew that she wanted to do more of it. She knew that I wanted to do more of it.
She's the first person I'd ask for acting tips.
No. We're not acting tips, just talking about acting. Be
I
nice.
I mean,
Josh.
I've seen Body of Evidence.
Josh.
It's out there.
Josh. But no.
Listen, she has other gifts.
But yeah. I noticed it more in regards to, like, I was able to get indoors really fast. Mm-hmm. Like, executives had me in, and before I'd do a scene, they wanted to ask a couple of questions. And, you know, at the time, it was totally cool and fun. And then over time, that sort of wears. But even,
right.
But I noticed it first there, and then definitely it started to move into, like, dating. And, like, now you're a fan, and you want to go out with me, and that feels fucking weird.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I think I've had to watch that.
And what about you guys?
Oh, goodness. I didn't really, I kind of pushed the association away. I didn't really find any sort of doors open for me other that people would tell me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure at auditions and things, people were more likely to keep me and get me the gig. But it wasn't like they told me that.
But in terms of how you felt about yourself, like
your
own
self-worth? Yeah. No, because I guess I never really, I didn't understand until I was actually on tour how big of a star Madonna was. It wasn't mm-hmm. like I thought about it ahead of time. Go, oh my God, she's so amazing. Oh, I'm so grateful and amazed to be a part of this tour. It was like only until I was actually ending it that I was like, wow, this is an amazing gig. But it was, I still with no sort of response from social media or knowing what, right. how the world was responding. It was just sort of this gig that went out into the ether, into nothingness. And then there I was back at square one.
It's kind of funny for all of us because I think one of the things that we are realizing now is that most of us were not big fans of hers
mm-hmm.
at the time. Like we were going after.
Well, I think that actually is a plus.
Yeah.
You know, it's
totally.
When I was a marketing executive at the studios, I worked on some of the biggest movies, none of which I liked. Like, I worked on Lord of the Rings. Could not be less interested. I do not need to see hairy little people walking. They have a battle, then they walk a little more, then they keep walking. I'm like, I don't even understand what the fuck this is.
Silver Lake.
But yet there are people.
It's Silver Lake.
Maybe that's why it felt so
yeah.
funny.
Right. Just blurred it out.
But literally, it's like, I think it helped that I was not a fan. Like, right. I was not, and like Harry Potter, the same thing. I'm like, I don't care about these little fantasy wizards or whatever. I don't, like, you know, and yet I think if I was that attached to it, I think it's a liability when you're like too into it. So I think that's, you know, a great thing. So did you feel like you were okay with that in terms of your... how you felt about you, because you already sort of had, like you said,
he was a
you
rock
had
star.
Some like yeah. local celebrity anyway.
And, you know, again, going back to the House of Extravaganza, when we went, you know, we traveled around town in a really big group. I mean, mm-hmm. it was never less than 20 of us wow. going here, there, everywhere. So, you know, I went back to my quote unquote house members who already knew, you know, who I was before the Madonna thing. You know, they surrounded us, you know, and kept us from, you know, a lot of that fake
friendship stuff. Well, it's great that you had that support.
Yeah, and we were very, you know, we were very lucky. Mm-hmm. You know, we were very lucky in that aspect.
So to wrap up this hour, because we're just about out of time, two words from each of you that would describe your experience with Madonna, Blonde Ambition, and Truth or Dare. Just the whole experience. Oh my God. If you had to give me two words.
Carlton, go. Because I don't know what to say yet.
Two words to express my feelings about it?
Yes, just the two things that come to mind.
Grateful.
Mm-hmm.
Wisdom.
Lewis?
Exciting. And wonder, you know, wonder-filled.
Mm. All right.
Mm. Extraordinary. Defining.
I think that's pretty amazing. All right, so before we go into the next hour, Carlton, let's tell everybody where to reach you on Twitter. It's at Carlton Wilborn.
At Carlton Wilborn on Twitter, yes.
And Kevin, it's at Kevin Stay.
At Kevin Stay everywhere. Instagram, MySpace even.
And Lewis, you're at
one Lewis Extrava.
Got it. With an Twitter. X.
Yeah. No E.
No E.
X-T-R-A-V.
Thank you guys so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. On to the next episode.
Woo-hoo! Awesome.
Thanks for listening. The No Holds Barred conversation continues 24/7 on Facebook at Josh Sabara Author and Twitter and Instagram at Josh Sabara. And then buckle your seatbelts for some titillating real talk. Porn Again, a memoir by Josh Sabara, is available now as a trade paperback, ebook, and audiobook.